David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Welcome to The Advisor with Stacey Chalemi, where we embark on a journey of personal growth, wellness, and empowerment. Join me, Stacey Chalemi, as we explore an insightful conversation with experts and thought leaders to uncover valuable tips and actionable insights that will elevate your life. From discussions on leadership and emotional intelligence to navigating midlife challenges and embrace personal transformation, this podcast is your go-to resource for inspiration and growth. So get ready to thrive, evolve, and unleash your true potential with me, your host, Stacey Chalemi. And today I'm very excited because we have a very special guest. She has a podcast on our show, and she works with integrative medicine, and she has an amazing background. And today she's going to talk about menopause and the possible solutions for overcoming some of the symptoms that comes with menopause. And this is Victoria, and Victoria is going to tell you a little about herself. She has previous episodes, so please go on her podcast to see her episodes, and she's just amazing. So Victoria, it's so great to have you back on the show. Tell everybody a little about yourself and what you do.
Hi, Stacey. Thank you again for having me. My name is Victoria Andarcia. I'm an integrative and functional medicine practitioner, and my practice is called Healthful Roots. And the basis of my company is that I work mostly with women, either on their fertility journey or women who are going through perimenopause and menopause and finding solutions that, you know, not only improve their quality of life, but their health span. And today we wanted to touch on things that are common as we get older, and especially during perimenopause and menopause, that you might not be aware of how exactly your hormones are affecting them, but that there are solutions, and then there are things that you can do to age gracefully and to be healthy for as long as possible.
I think it's so important that people understand some of the symptoms and some of the things that go on with perimenopause, because I, even myself, when I started to go through perimenopause, I didn't even know that I was going through it. All of a sudden, all these symptoms just came out from nowhere, and I didn't know what was happening. And, you know, finally I went to a doctor, a functional medicine doctor, and they did a lot of blood work on me, and my testosterone was completely down to almost nothing. My progesterone was completely down to almost nothing. And with the help of a functional medicine doctor and going through hormone therapy and lots of other different things that I did, they were able to balance my hormones, and I felt like I was 20 something else again. You know, it was like I just had so much energy. My moods were, you know, balanced. I was more focused. I had clarity. I was just, you know, it was just a total turnaround in my health. So I think it's so important, you know, because a lot of times, you know, women are going through so many different changes, you know, you're starting to gain weight, you know, a lot of times you experience, you know, muscle loss where, you know, all of a sudden you're looking in the mirror and you can go like this, and it's like, where did the muscle go, you know? And even people, you know, they experience osteoporosis. It's such a challenging time in a woman's life, you know, and even men, they go through it also, you know, in different ways. But, you know, for a woman, it's really hard. And, you know, I know that you have some great information today, so I'd like you really to share it with everybody, because, you know, menopause is a huge deal. And a lot of people just settle to do nothing and just, you know, just deal with it. And, you know, there are lots of options out there, and they shouldn't have to suffer and experience these symptoms. And, you know, and some people don't even know where to start. And that's the problem too, is like, where do I begin? Who do I go to? How do I get help? You know, what's going on? There's so many things to talk about today. So I just love to hear what you have to say.
Well, exactly that, right? This is about like empowering people to know, you know, what to do and what to look for. And, you know, you mentioned osteoporosis, and, you know, that's one of the things that we've accepted as something that just happens with age. However, you know, osteoporosis is weakening of the bones. And what people don't realize is that if you're older than 65 and you fall, you have a hip fracture, 1 in 3 adults over the age of 65 after that hip fracture will be dead within 12 months.
Really?
The numbers are pretty high. And then also you factor in that how your life changes after that. So we call it morbidity. And a lot of people will, so I don't have the stats on that, but a lot of people end up having like loss of mobility and independence, you know, and a lot, half of the people will not be able to get back to their pre-fracture strength.
Yeah.
So then you think, okay, well, if I'm over 65 and I have a hip fracture, you know, I can potentially lose my independence, which is a huge thing. And, or if I have a lot of other conditions, I can possibly, you know, pass away from this injury. But then when you look at when insurance starts to cover, in most cases, the DEXA scan, the DEXA scan is how you look at bone. It's
Yeah.
at the age of 65 or above, but it's too late then. Right. So then, what are risk factors? You have to know what are your risk factors for osteoporosis. So one of them is like petite frame. So people who are just generally petite, smoking, excessive alcohol use, family history. So if you have a family history, then that will go up. If you have been taking a lot of steroids, like if you have an autoimmune disease, or for example, if you have COPD and you know your doctor has been prescribing prednisone or methylprednisolone just for your flares, that can definitely increase your risk. Yeah, so those are the risk factors. So if you go to your doctor and you say, hey, like I have these risk factors, I need to be screened for osteoporosis, then what can you do? There are a lot of studies and a lot of evidence that strength training also strengthens your bones, right? So being proactive, you don't have to wait until you're 65 to like, oh, what am I going to do? You start now. Like the things that you do early on are what are going to contribute to being healthier later on. So strength training, but then also hormones, right? One of the things that estrogen helps us do is to keep our bones strong. And as we get older, we lose that estrogen. So we do lose the bone strength and the ability to regenerate bone. And they have shown that women who do start hormone replacement therapy can maintain their bone strength longer than if they didn't, right? And then if you add like testosterone as well, testosterone works with the estrogen to keep your bones strong. But do you want to do that when you already figured out that you have osteoporosis, or do you want to do that ahead of time?
Exactly.
Right? Because the pharmaceuticals that we have now to treat osteoporosis don't really work as well as lifestyle and hormone replacement, and they have a lot of side effects.
Yes, definitely, 100%. I think that's the one, the greatest thing about functional medicine and integrative medicine is that they focus on trying to find the problem before it occurs. And I think it's so important for people to not wait till it happens, but to really, keep track of how your health is. And then, if things are starting to slide, and you usually can figure that out when doctors have, look at your blood work and they see elevations in certain areas or they see declines in certain areas, they can tell, what the possibilities that can occur in the future if your levels are still going like this. And that's when we can, doctors and people in the medical field can like jump in and help and try to prevent these things before it's too late.
Exactly, because I think that one of the things that we do is that it's a lot harder in traditional medicine to correct something if it's already too late, right? And then I don't think that, at least I didn't learn about this in medical school, was talking about like supplementation. You know, are you getting enough vitamin D? Are you getting enough calcium in your diet? Vitamin D, a lot of doctors don't even check that, you know, because a lot of times insurance won't cover it as a preventative thing. But like vitamin D is so important, not only for your bone strength, but for your immunity, for cognitive health, for so many other things. So, you know, in that setting, it's, and I think you've mentioned it, you know, when we've had other discussions, is screening for nutrient deficiencies and how much better you can feel when you address those nutrient deficiencies.
Yeah, it's amazing, but when I had the blood work done and they were screening me for vitamins and they were screening me for nutrient deficiencies. It was like there were certain areas that were low. And it was like, okay, you should be doing this, you should be doing this, you should be taking this. And once I did that, it was just a huge difference in my energy level and the way I felt. I wasn't fatigued anymore because there was a point where I didn't even want to roll out of bed, because I was so fatigued. I had chronic fatigue because I was going through hormonal changes and it played a big role in my overall health.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the good things about the DEXA scan If you pay for it out of pocket, you can find places where you can get it for $200 and $300, which is expensive if your insurance is not going to cover it, but I think it's better than like not having it at all. But the DEXA scan has the ability not only to look at your bone strength, but it can also tell us about visceral fat, which we'll get into, how much visceral fat you have. But then it can also talk like show you muscle, like how much muscle does your body have? Because these are other things that change as you go into menopause. So for $200, $300, you're getting a lot of information on things that are really important to look at, right? Because we have two types of fat. You have the subcutaneous fat, which is a fat that you just like pinch. And then you have the visceral fat, which you can't really see, but that's the one that collects around your organs and the one that's very inflammatory and harmful for your health. And as
Yes.
your hormones change, especially in that, menopausal phase, you can collect more visceral fat, right?
Yeah.
Which this low level inflammation is going to cause, joint pain, can cause neuroinflammation. It can increase your risk of coronary artery disease. So you want
Right.
to look at that. And so that's another area where hormone replacement can come in, but also changing your diet, right? Like a lot of people don't realize that during perimenopause and menopause, the way you eat needs to change as well. So that's something that you can see on the DEXA scan, which is really important. And then, the term for muscle loss later is called like sarcopenia, so loss of muscle, which I mean, aside from the DEXA, I know some gyms have those in-body scans where you can have a look at your muscle composition. But it was at the age of 30, and then every decade after, you're losing 3 to 5% of muscle.
Right.
And I mean, if you're at 30 and you like really never worked out and you're like starting with not a lot, imagine like that adds by the time that you get to like 50 or 60,
Yeah.
And muscle is important not only for your metabolism, because it speeds up your metabolism the more muscle you have, but for bone strength. You need
Yes.
muscle for bone strength.
Yes.
So that's my thing on the DEXA. It's beneficial for various reasons.
Oh, I agree 100%. I think it's so important to know these things. And one important thing that you said, you talked about nutrition, and so many people are interested in how should I eat? How is that, going to make a big impact? Can I actually, change my diet, and is it going to make a big impact in the way I feel? For women who are going through menopause, what are some of the things that you suggest that maybe the things they do eat and the things they should avoid?
Well, the things that we should eat. I saw this reel on Instagram a couple weeks ago, and I was like, I didn't realize how much of my adult life I was going to spend thinking about how much protein I'm eating, right? And
Yeah.
like, yes, because it's a hard thing, right? Like if you look at it's 1 milligram per kilogram of body weight, or 1 gram per kilogram of body weight is what you want
Right.
for protein. And that's a lot of protein, especially if you're like someone who just like grabs a yogurt in the morning and just heads out, right? You really
Yeah.
want to focus on protein intake, because that's going to be one, it keeps you full longer. So it's better for not eating junk and snacking, but it's good
Yeah.
for muscle strength. But the other one is fiber, right? Like fiber is really, really important, especially when you're going through these changes. Everyone is going to have different hormone fluctuations. I have women who, are low on estrogen, but like during perimenopause, there are some women who will have like spikes of estrogen. And like these are the women who are getting like really heavy cycles, really bad cramping. Like
Yeah.
when you're having a high fiber diet, it actually helps absorb like some of the waste products of like hormones in your gut, and it'll help you release it. So fiber is really important. Then in my worrying about and maintaining like a diet and healthy fats, cutting out junk food, cutting out alcohol. Alcohol is a huge one. One, it prevents you from burning fat. I think it's for
Yeah.
like 72 hours after, you've had alcohol, it prevents you from burning fat. And let's just not even get into how much it affects your sleep.
Yeah.
And then if you're not sleeping well, that leads to other health problems. So I'm not saying like don't drink at all, but definitely be mindful. And then,
Yeah.
some people say if you're gonna drink, like don't drink like right before bed. Try to do it a little bit earlier, maybe when you get home from work, because this effect on sleep is really, really pronounced. And then the last one, which might not be super obvious, but I'm gonna say is caffeine. I think that we overdo it a lot with the caffeine. And
Yeah.
in that phase of perimenopause and menopause, I find that they are the most stressed right? Like their kids are either like still in school or going to school, or they're
Yeah.
having some other life thing happening with their
Yeah.
own hormonal changes. And then
Yes.
you have to look at how stress is also going to impact these hormone levels. And then if
Right.
you're constantly like drinking caffeine throughout the day, it actually makes you more tired.
Yeah, it does. It's so true. That was
Yes.
one of the things my doctor had mentioned to me. He's like, "All right, I want you to cut out the caffeine. I want you to cut out the alcohol because it cuts off the oxygen," he said, also down below. So when you're taking, when you're drinking large consumptions of alcohol or caffeine, you're cutting out some of the oxygen, and it's affecting you down below. So if you have problems down below where you're getting that cramp in and you're getting pain and you're experiencing, dryness and stuff like that, or overactive bladder, it's just adding to it. It's just instigating it to become even worse, So, that was one of the things that I was told. And what's your intake on that?
Well, if you look at the like that cramping part and how it makes it worse, I can definitely see that with the alcohol. If your liver is prioritizing having to detoxify from alcohol, you're not going to be detoxifying from hormones in the liver. So that's definitely going to make like cramping worse. I
Right.
heard about coffee making like if you have like an overactive bladder, or like I've heard of that if it's excessive, making that worse
Yeah.
as well. So I definitely think that in that way too, could definitely impact.
Yeah. I think a lot of people don't realize that because a lot of people, as they get older, they go out, they have dinner, they have alcohol, and the alcohol consumption sometimes increases as you get older for some people. And, these are things that I think play a huge role. And especially when you're eating, really figuring out the right foods. I know that when I incorporated more vegetables into my diet, I actually felt a lot better. It was that all that fiber and some of the proteins in the vegetables that made me feel so much better, So I made it an effort to eat more vegetables in my daily consumption, in my daily diet, and that seemed to help a lot.
And I would even say, like, anybody listening, just to try it, right? Like, even early in the morning, like, just try having protein, like eggs with either mushrooms or something like filling. You don't
Yeah.
want, I don't, when I eat those big meals, which are healthy and they're not like, super high in calories, but just like high in nutrition, I don't snack really. I can wait until my
Right.
next meal. But if I just like grab a croissant,
Yeah.
like 2 hours later, I'm like, oh man, like, what am I gonna eat now?
Yeah.
So it really makes a difference.
I agree with you completely. When I eat certain foods, I stay fuller for a longer period of time. I tend to, and you could have more of those foods too. If you're eating healthy foods, you're eating the right foods, you could actually eat a little bit more and it's not going to affect you. Because, like, I think weight gain is something you hear a lot of women complain about too, is that, they're looking in the mirror, and I had this problem too, is like one day I looked in the mirror and I was like, where did all this extra, fat come from on my hips? It was like, my hips, my stomach. I was like, oh my God, it's like, and I hear women all the time, certain they gain weight or the weight, goes to certain areas. You hear a lot of women complaining about their hips, and about their stomach, gain weight on their stomach and stuff like that. Is there anything women can do to help them with that weight gain during the times of perimenopause or menopause?
Yeah, so I think it's one, like understanding like what's happening, right? You're naturally losing muscle, right? So if you're putting on muscle, it's going to help speed up your metabolism. So definitely focusing on strength training. I love like high intensity workout classes, but they're not the best for you because they're actually putting your body into more stress and you're not building as much muscle as if you just focus on strength training. So focusing on that is important, but then also understanding that with this lowering of estrogen, you're also becoming more insulin resistant. That's why, like, I'll have women who are like 55, for example, where like I've never had high cholesterol, right? And like now, like my sugar's high and I've never had high sugar. So with that decrease in estrogen, you're becoming more insulin resistant. And then, if you have high insulin for a long amount of time, that's what causes diabetes. But my point in bringing that up is just like understanding that that's why you're gaining the fat, right?
Yeah.
Because becoming more insulin resistant with that loss of estrogen. So then it's just like, yes, how am I going to change my diet? Intermittent fasting can be great, but it's not for everybody. For people
Yes.
who are super stressed out and tired all the time, do not do intermittent fasting because it's going to put more stress on your body. So then I would say focusing on the protein and getting the fiber at every meal, incorporating the strength training. But then I find also sometimes people are just like, I'm only gaining weight in my tummy, right? My stomach area. And then when I do like cortisol tests to see, like these people have really high cortisol levels, which is like a stress hormone, right? Which was necessary. We need it. But if it's high for a long amount of time, your sugar levels go up. It is also going to affect your sugar and your cholesterol, but then it's going to bring down the sex hormones even more.
Yeah.
So then it's finding ways to manage stress. And for some people, it can be different and it changes. I used to love meditation. I can't meditate anymore. So I go to yoga, you know, and it's like finding like the thing that is going to help you bring down your stress, especially during that time.
Right.
And for some women, because I've had it happen, who are perimenopausal, who start gaining that weight, it's telling them work out less, right? Because they're working out like 6-7 days a week. That's not good either.
Yeah.
It can be as simple as like starting them on progesterone,
right?
And their body starts to like recalibrate, and then like that weight will start coming off, because some women have good habits already. Some people are already doing the exercise and they're already eating healthy, and they're still gaining the weight. Then it's just like, okay, is it stress, you know, or is it hormonal? Let's like have a look at what's going on.
Right. Exactly. And that was like an issue for me too. It's like my cortisol level was always normal. And then all of a sudden out of the blue, it started to spike. And it was so hard to get that cortisol level back to normal. You know, I know there's a lot of women out there that suffer from a high cortisol level, you know, especially when they're going through menopause. Is there like some things, you know, so is strength training is really good for the cortisol, yoga? And if you can do meditation, it's good. Are there some other things people can do to try to get that cortisol level down?
So I would say it's like an Instagram trend, but it's true. Having coffee on a empty stomach is definitely not good, because you're every time that you have caffeine, energy drink, whatever, you're spiking your cortisol level, right?
Right. So
eat first or have tea and then have your coffee is important, to like not to overstimulate yourself. And I find that because I've done it, I went 3 weeks without drinking coffee, and then I found that I didn't really need it. I was craving taste. So then I was like started to drink decaf because I was having issues with the cortisol thing. But then it's that. And then it's also like listening to your body. I used to be so rigid, and a lot of my patients are like that, where I'd be like, I'm gonna work out 5 times a week and I'm gonna do this. And then sometimes I just wake up and I'm like, I was supposed to go to the gym today, but I feel like doing yoga, right? Like learning to like listen to your body, because I think that we just like get stuck on a schedule and then we are so inflexible, we can't go back. So doing that, breath work helps, yoga helps, meditation can be helpful. And then there's this, it's Open House is a podcast, but she also has like this program where you do like somatic practices. So it's just like, it's Pilates, but with your breath work, or she'll do, like shaking, right? Like just, there's so many different things that you can do. You just have to find like what your thing is.
Yeah.
Or
I think
even
that's, a bath is, you know, I tell people that all the time. You know, maybe a bath with a little Epsom salts, that, you know, with lavender scent or something like that, can like relax somebody. You know, if you could take 10, 15 minutes out, you know, maybe at night before you go to bed, and just like relax in a bath, it could be so beneficial, I think.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times too, people feel selfish because they're like, oh, like I have kids and I have to like do this. But you really have to take like whatever, you know, not the whole day, but like take some time in the day, 20 minutes just to like be with yourself, right? I think it's really important to keep your sanity, because that cortisol piece is like super important, and it can also affect your mental health and your mood, which is a big thing that happens during perimenopause and menopause. I'll have women who are like, oh my God, my kid is like really irritating me right now, and I know it's not his fault. Like I hear that a lot.
Then
you're like, okay, so like you do the testing and you're okay, you're a little like out of balance, and then you have to, I can give you progesterone or whatever it is, but how are you gonna take care of yourself?
Right. Exactly. I think that's so important because a lot of people have that guilt or they feel shameful because they feel like they put their kids first or they put their spouse or partner first and it's like and they're always the last one and people have to realize they can't unless you take care of yourself you barely can't take care of others well I think that's something that people have to recognize too. What do you think?
No, I 100% agree with you, and it's something that I talk to them about, and it can be 10 minutes, but it has to be something, and especially one of the other things that I wanted to talk about was like heart health as you get older.
Yeah.
Stress can impact also your heart health, and it's really important just to like try to manage that. And it's easier said than done, and some people need to speak to like a therapist or just someone who can help like guide them through those tough moments. But
Yeah.
when it comes to heart health, heart disease is like the number one killer in women. But that number doubles when they've reached menopause already, right? Because
Yeah.
estrogen is protective. Estrogen is protective for men and women, but women have more estrogen and it keeps your like blood vessels pliable and healthy. And then when you start to lose that, then you can start building up plaque more easily. And you have to consider what risk factors, right? Like, did you smoke? Your family history of heart disease? Have you had diabetes or high blood pressure or high cholesterol like throughout your life? You got to consider that. So one
Yeah.
of the tests that I think is, not something that you wait until something happens to get, but something that you can do in your 40s would be the coronary calcium score test. Have you heard of that one?
No, I haven't.
So it's CT scan and it looks at plaque in the heart, right? It can see hardened plaque. And so
Okay.
based on that, it gives you like a score. And if you score really high, then you're like, wow, okay, like I have a really high risk of having a cardiac event. Or if it's low, then like you're doing things right and you just continue on that path. But that's like a good non-invasive way to know rather than waiting, especially if you have a family history of heart disease.
I know a lot of times you see like older people go for a test like that to, and then some of them, if they do have a lot of plaque, they end up getting stents put in them and stuff like that. But it's probably better to go for these tests prior before you get to that point because I think it's 70%, before
Before
you could have a certain amount of plaque in your body, and then it's you hit that danger zone pretty much.
right. No, that's very true. And like for example, in my like my brother, we have a family history of heart disease, tends to affect the men. I think at 30, I had him do that test. Okay, like do we have anything to worry about now? Okay, we'll probably do it again at 40, and then you can kind of just like keep track and see
Yeah.
what style things do we have to adjust. Like are you eating too many burgers and fries? Because for him it can be the case.
Yeah.
Or like what do we have to change? But I just think that that's a good test, and it's not expensive. Like I've had people pay for it out of pocket, and you can get it done anywhere from like $75 to $100.
Right.
So I think that that's just something to keep in mind because women do have a risk of heart disease that increases, especially during menopause.
So I, again, just keeping track of your plaque level, and also by choosing the right foods. Food plays a big part of it too. If you eat healthy foods, you won't have a buildup of plaque, so rapidly, as you get older, it seems like, even if it runs in the family, you could probably, prevent it or slow it down by the foods that you choose as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You can mitigate your risk. And that's something that I've seen, like when I've worked in the hospital, that people will be like, oh, I'm diabetic and I have a family history of diabetes. Not necessarily. No, it's just like habits are also passed down, right?
Yeah,
So I think
yeah.
it's about that. And I've seen people who have a very strong history of heart disease who then get to 80 and nothing happened because they were conscious of that and they decided that they were going to eat healthy and exercise and all those other
Right.
factors. So I think that that's also important because I have seen people just say like, well, it runs in the family. It is what it is, but it's not the case.
Yeah, and that's something I've heard so many times, and it kind of annoys me because it's like, yes, you might have it in your family, but by changing the way you live and by changing certain things, you actually could prevent it or improve your condition. And people sometimes they think, okay, it runs in my family, there's nothing I can do, and it's
Exactly.
like, there's so much you could do.
And I think that that's like one of the reasons I went into functional medicine is like I was just so frustrated to see that things were preventable, but I don't know that like people feel empowered to do so, or they don't even know that they can. And I really find that very frustrating when people are just like, well, you know, because your life could be so much better. You can be so much healthier if you just knew what you had to do it.
I find sometimes too is that when you talk to primary doctors, they frown upon functional medicine because they weren't taught it in medical school. And because they weren't taught it, they don't understand it, or they don't have enough information about it that they could support it or recommend it, unless you've gone, unless you've studied it and you understand the importance of functional medicine integrated with regular medicine, and medical. And a lot of people just sometimes I think people fear what they don't know. But functional medicine changed my life. I did a total turnaround. It helped me improve my health and my overall well-being completely.
Yeah, and I have again like people who come to me and as like their last resort who've been dealing with stuff for years, and nobody talked to them about food triggers, changing their diet, and then you just do those things, address like nutrient deficiencies, and then they're like, wow, like I haven't been able to mow my lawn for years because I was scared that I was gonna pass out or something, and you're just like, really, we just changed your diet, like I didn't do anything crazy.
100%. And I don't think people realize how easy it could be. How you could just by making certain tweaks in your lifestyle, you can change your overall well-being. I think it's so important that we get this message across to people because and I think a lot of people are just like they just don't know where to go. They just don't know where to start. I think that's one of the problems too.
Yeah, and when we're talking about lifestyle, so the last one that I wanted to bring up because it's super important is dementia, right? Alzheimer's. So women are times more likely than men to have Alzheimer's. And there's a doctor called Dr. Lisa Moscone, and she wrote The Menopause Brain, which is a great book for anyone who wants to read it. But she talks about how these changes, and it's not just the changes that happen during perimenopause, but anytime a woman goes through like drastic hormone changes, so for example, like childbirth, like those just big fluctuations in hormones, they can affect your cognition, right? And they're thinking that that's one of the reasons why women are at increased risk of Alzheimer's than men. And then you add in if you're diabetic, if you have high blood pressure, all those things that they, on top of the fact that we're going to go through menopause and already at increased risk, then those things will significantly impact your risk as well. So that's why it's so important for the lifestyle that we've been talking about, because we want to decrease our risk of these, well, of dementia. Like that would be awful, right? So that one is a really important one because it also comes down to like how you're eating, how you're moving, and how you're dealing with things in your life, right? How you're dealing with stress.
What are some of the things people can do to help prevent the possibilities of dementia or Alzheimer's occurring in their life?
So, I mean, you can do gen like the APOE gene testing to see if you have the gene that increases your risk. Because I think that sometimes if you see that, then you're more likely to make changes that you need to make. But again, it just goes back to what you're eating, right? Alcohol. I think it's also one of the things that I focus a lot on my practice is toxins, right? Like, what toxins are you being exposed to, and how are you detoxing from these? Where it can be like environmental, or maybe you just like genetically are not someone who can like detox properly. How do you enhance those detox pathways? And then if you are diabetic or you do have high blood pressure, you know, what are we going to do about that? How are we going to mitigate that? Because one of the things that people, because you can't feel blood pressure, you can't feel it unless you're high and you have a headache, is that people don't realize that you can be getting like little strokes like throughout your life. So like microvascular changes, it shows up as on the scan on an MRI, and that over time is going to increase your risk of dementia. It's like I think number two, vascular dementia is what they call it. So it's really important not just to be like, oh, I have high blood pressure or whatever. Like, what are your risk factors and how do we mitigate those? I think it's important. And then they have not said like, oh, use hormone replacement for prevention of dementia. Like that's not on the table yet. But like knowing what I know, I would definitely want to one, keep my hormones healthy as long as I can. And just based off of all the things that we talked about, I would start hormone replacement as soon as, I could.
Exactly. I'm all for it. I, like I said, I've seen a huge difference, and I feel younger. I have the energy and so many different things, and I think for women too, their menstruation, that was a big factor also, is that I was bleeding for 2 weeks, and I was bleeding heavily, and I didn't understand what was happening. And that was in the beginning, before I was put on hormone therapy. And then once I was put on hormone therapy, my, these abnormal periods where they weren't even coming on a 28-day basis, all of a sudden they started, coming on a 28-day basis. The blood flow was really low, and it wasn't, heavy. And I was having a normal cycle where it was less than the appropriate amount of days, and not this crazy like 2 week span where you're just like dragging your feet and you don't understand why you're going through this. And these are like, and the fatigue too, these are all factors that, people should address, and they shouldn't just accept and say, oh, I'm getting older, this is what happens.
Yeah, because it doesn't have to be that way. And if you had gone to a different doctor, they probably would have recommended birth control.
Yes, and that's happened to me too. And I get annoyed. I'm like, no, I don't want to go on birth control. I am 52 years old. I don't need to go on birth control. And they said, I've come into like a GYN's office for certain things, and that's the first thing they say. And then they'll say, well, how about a partial hysterectomy or a hysterectomy? And I'm like, that's the same look I gave them. I was like, this is ridiculous, And then it was like, and then when I went to see a functional medicine doctor, he just shook his head, and he was like, what an idiot, And it was just like, and just by making certain changes and using hormone therapy, and by, just doing different things, they were able to get rid of all the problems that I was having. And, because people don't realize, you hear birth control, there's so many side effects with birth control, and it doesn't really do anything. It doesn't really help. It might mask a couple symptoms, but it's not helping the situation. And then, if you do get a partial hysterectomy, or you get a hysterectomy, you're going right into postmenopause. And that's a whole different area that we haven't even touched base on. But that makes you feel a lot older, and your body's not functioning the way it used to. So it's like,
Yeah, even if you keep your ovaries.
yes. Exactly. And I don't think people are aware of that, and they hear their doctors say that, and they're like, oh, I don't have to get my period. Oh, wonderful. And they don't realize the consequences that it's bringing as well.
Yeah, and that's one of the things in one of the books, The New Menopause, and Dr. Aviva Ram, who I follow, half of these procedures, that surgical procedures that we're doing on women, are unnecessary. Like these hysterectomies they're offering, like you just started hormone replacement and it got better. If you start someone on birth control at 50 because they're having heavy periods, what you're doing is that you're shutting down their body's ability to make their own hormones, and that's why the periods get better, right? Because you're not fixing the problem. You just like stopped the body from doing what it was like trying to do.
Yes, exactly. And then you also, a lot of women experience weight gain also when that happens too. So it's not helping the situation. So I always would get annoyed when, doctors, would offer that. And I feel like certain types of doctors just look in a triangle, and they only have like certain options they could offer. That's why it's so good to go to like a functional medicine doctor, or a doctor who believes in integrative medicine, because they look at things from a totally different perspective. Because it's not just three options. There's more ways to help your body, and those, to me, a lot of times are unnecessary. They do those procedures, and a woman didn't have to go through that,
No, and the good, the way I practice is sometimes patients will come with, oh, like what do you think about this? Okay, so we look at it, like, can this help you? Yeah, okay. Like we work together to determine, because like I mentioned, not everyone's going to be comfortable with hormone replacement. Okay, so what can we do that's going to positively impact your hormones? And I've had women who don't want to be on hormone replacement, but we just change certain lifestyle things that we know that they're struggling with. We maybe add some things to their diet that can kind of help regulate their hormones and they feel better, right? Because I think sometimes too, people are like, oh, you don't want the birth control? You don't want the hysterectomy? Well, okay. Sorry, I can't offer you anything else. But like, no, you got to work together to find a solution.
Yes. And I found that a lot of doctors, they do exactly that. They just offer a couple of solutions, and that's it. And then, people are like, well, that's what my GYN said, and they're like, and they're just, because the doctor said that, I always encourage people, go for a second or a third opinion, and go see different doctors, and some people, I've talked to people, they don't even know what a functional medicine doctor is. So it really, it's so important that people understand that there are more options and there are more doctors out there that can help on a more natural basis and really get your body to feel back to its normal, healthy self.
Yeah, and even if it's not a functional medicine doctor, there are some traditional Chinese medicine practitioners that work with women and their hormones. And I've had friends who go either for fertility or they're going because they have really heavy periods, and just like doing the herbs and the acupuncture can help. Like there are so many modalities out there. You just have to be open, one, and like look for different ways to handle things.
100%. I agree with you. Now, if you had to look at today's conversation and you really want to emphasize on some important factors, what are some of the things you'd like to emphasize to our listeners?
Well, so we talked about osteoporosis, coronary artery disease, and heart disease, about the visceral fat, which bothers a lot of people, and the muscle loss and dementia. So the main thing with all of these is that these are risks that increase as we get older, and especially perimenopause and postmenopausal. But there are lifestyle factors that we can use to decrease, mitigate this from happening. But then it's also understanding that what we did in our 20s is not going to work for us in our 40s. And you have to be okay with like changing how you work out, changing how you eat. But then it's also the prevention, right? Like if you know that you already have risk factors and you're 35, what can you do to like mitigate those risks? You can get rid of like type 2 diabetes. If you're on insulin for diabetes, you don't always have to be on insulin for diabetes. So what can you do? And then what tests can you do, right, to kind of see where you're at? So the DEXA scan, don't wait until 65. I think that's way too late. If you have a family history of coronary artery disease, get a CT calcium score test and see where am I in the list of risk factors. It's just about being proactive and understanding that these things are common, but it doesn't have to be normal.
Exactly, 100%, 100%. Now, tell me some of the services that you provide.
Okay, so I do telehealth, and my services come in like packages. So I do like 3 month packages to start because obviously, like, this is lifestyle stuff and it's not gonna happen in one visit. And then after that, you have the option to sign up for the rest of the year. But we do functional medicine testing through like blood work. I do like salivary cortisol tests, GI map. We look at everything depending on what you come with. And when we work together, we're meeting monthly. So we'll have our first appointment. We kind of just look at everything. What tests do we need to order or what do we need to do? And then from there, we kind of just slowly start making our way through. Okay, is it lifestyle? We start with lifestyle. Okay, now we have to address the hormones. Let's address the hormones. We have to address this. It's just kind of a stepwise process. And that's why like the minimum is 3 months, because that's around the time that it takes for people to start being like, wow, yeah, this works.
Yeah, exactly. I love it because I think it's so important to people to look into it. Now, do you have a newsletter or anything they can sign up for?
Yes, actually, it is in like my link tree on Instagram. So I have an Instagram, very active on that. But I do have a newsletter that I send every Monday or every other Monday when I have a podcast come out. So that'll be there. And then I do offer a lot of free webinars. So if people just follow me on Instagram, they'll see when they're happening, and they're from anywhere from fertility to like perimenopause and menopause and hormone replacement. I've done some on weight loss. So if people just want to follow me at it's at Healthful Roots MD, you can just see what's happening there because there's usually something going on.
Oh, I love it. And also, where can people find you on your website?
So the website is www.healthfulrootsmd.com.
I love it. This has been amazing. Before we go, is there anything else that you'd like to say to the audience before we go? Because this is, something I think is so important for people. There's always so many questions, and I know one common question is, that I get a lot from people is that their libido drops during menopause, and that's like a big factor, I think, in a lot of women. And is there anything that you'd like to, maybe suggest, or any advice you'd like to give about, your libido drop in and the urge to want to have intercourse is not there like it used to be?
Yeah, so that's a common one and it's complex. So I'll start with I do offer free 15-minute consults. So for anybody who wants to just like sign up on my Instagram, I have it there. But
Right.
that one is complicated because it can be like, are you having pain or discomfort with sex? Nobody's going to want to have sex if it's painful. So in
Yes.
that case, just doing like vaginal, like the vaginal suppositories, or you can even do a ring. DHEA intravaginally is also helpful if the estrogen hasn't worked for you. So I would say that's one thing that you have to address. Then the second thing is, if your testosterone is really low or your hormones are really low in general, that's going to kill desire,
Yeah.
especially cortisol is involved. I've seen if you're very stressed out, you're not going to want to have sex. Right. Like I
Right.
have women who are like, they don't even want to go to the gym anymore. And then I'm like, what makes you think you want to have sex if you don't even want to go to the gym? So it's like, how do we get you out of that slump? And it could be
Yeah.
like hormones or just like lifestyle changes to kind of get you not feeling so tired. But I do think that one of the things that we kind of neglect is connection with your partner.
Yeah.
And so that's one that like, you have to people just think like, oh, I want to have sex, so I'm gonna, why can't I do it? But it's also like, are you connected to your partner or is there a disconnect there? Because I think that's an uncommon one that we don't talk about. So then it kind of just depends on which one is going on. Because if you're
Right.
like, oh, I have dryness and it hurts, that is so easy. Let's go. Like
Yeah.
vaginal estrogen, let's all the way. But then if it's one of the other two, then it's just going to take a little longer to kind of get things in balance. And you can use hormones. I've used peptides. There are, so if it's, I don't, have you heard of peptides like spironolactone and PT141? So that can kind of help with libido a little bit as well. So
Right.
there's so many things that you can try, but at the end of the day, it kind of comes down to like, what is the root cause and just what are you willing to try?
Right, exactly. I love it. I love it. I know that I think this has been an amazing session. I think you gave a lot of great information and a lot of great advice. These are all common factors, things in women's lives that we all experience at some point. And it's so important that people understand that there's more than one solution out there, and that, going to a functional medicine doctor or looking for other options is the way to go. Don't just listen to what one person says. If it's not what you think is going to be good for you, or it's not working, open yourself up to other options. And I'm a big believer in functional medicine and integrative medicine. So I really love what you're doing. And I thank you so much for coming on the show today. You've been amazing.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed our chat today.
Me too. And I look forward to our future chats. You have a great day.
Thanks, you too.